The Anton Savage Show
with Kearys.ie
on News Talk.
If you need legal advice, we have with us our legal expert, Sonia McEntee, who is Principal Solicitor at Sonia McEntee Solicitors and Chair of the Law Society PR Committee. 53106, if you are willing to invest 30 cent in her advice, if you think her advice should be given free gratis, you can go on WhatsApp 087 1400 106. Sonia, good morning.
Good morning, Anton.
Now, we have a question in already that says, my mother is in, this is an interesting one. It's amazing how many of these always come back to family conflict. The family conflict in this instance. My mother is in a nursing home. My father has died. My sister has power of attorney. My sister has changed the locks of the family home and given keys to my siblings, but not to me. What are my rights, please, to get access?
Okay, that's a tough one, all right, in the terms of family conflict. When you mention power of attorney, I'm probably going to assume it's an enduring power of attorney, which goes to the mental capacity of the mother. And that is where typically a trusted family member is asked to make those decisions on behalf of someone who can no longer make them for themselves. An attorney in those circumstances does take full control of the estate and the affairs of the person who is no longer or considered no longer to be capable of doing that for themselves. So the decision as to whether to change the locks on the family home could well have been properly taken by the person who's holding the attorney. I suppose the excluding of one sibling does seem unfair, but maybe there's more going on here than we really recognise. So what can be done about it?
But sorry, let me ask in this. Does effectively the power of attorney mean that you act in loco of the individual? That you can say they would have barred you from the house, therefore I'm barring you from the house?
There's an autonomy in the decision making that goes with it. All right. So the control is handed over. So, for example, that house could be placed for sale by the attorney. Now, the attorney is bound to act in the best interests of the individual that they're acting for. So that's certainly a relevant factor. And if there was an interference there with family relations between the person that they're acting for and another sibling, that might be something where further steps need to be taken. But what might those further steps be? If an attorney is considered to be acting beyond the scope of what they're empowered to do, under the old system, that would have involved an application to court to challenge the decisions that the attorney is taking, potentially to claim in court that the attorney isn't fit, perhaps, to be acting in that role or is acting against the interests of the person that they're supposed to be protecting. Under the new system, enduring powers of attorney now are registered with the decision support service, and the complaint will go there, and that complaint will be investigated and a view will be taken as to whether the attorney is acting appropriately or not. But it does seem like it's one that I think there's a fine line there, because that particular issue where you've been excluded from the family home, which arguably you may not have any rights in relation to anyway. So if keys have been given to one sibling and not to you, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have been, that you're legally prejudiced.
The power of attorney is an easy thing to say. It's a huge degree, I would imagine, of complexity and responsibility. I remember talking to people about fiduciary responsibility of directors, and they're saying, well, yeah, your responsibility is to the shareholder, but which shareholder? The one that bought in at 50 cent or the one that bought in at 10 euro? Is it the long-term value of the shareholder? So yeah. That thing of acting in the best interest of the person for whom you have power of attorney, it's very complicated.
It's a huge responsibility, and it's one that family members obviously take on up and down the country when typically their older, you know, their parents or older relatives are no longer able to do it for themselves. So it's a huge position of trust.
Because I assume you could say, I mean, there's different interpretations. You could decide I have to act in what I believe is the best interests of the individual, which may be diametrically opposed to the way they themselves would previously have acted. If you have a parent who was fierce, indulgent, ate all the bad stuff, lived wild, you can't turn them into a Jesuit in their retirement, or do you? Very difficult.
No, well, look, I think there's some consideration. The acting in the best interests, of course, would be legally assessed, I suppose, if that question arose. But the day-to-day living still has to go on. And there are questions that come up within families for, like, why are you spending money on this? Or why are you spending money on that? And at the end of the day, the attorney has to realise that they can be called to account for all of the decisions that they have made. And an independent arbiter, if necessary, will decide whether they've acted appropriately or not. And this just brings me round for a moment to the change in the system that we've had in the last just over a year now, where previously enduring powers of attorney after someone is medically certified as becoming incapable of making decisions for themselves was registered in the High Court. And typically it was a family member who had been chosen by the individual who took over responsibility for the management of their affairs. We have a new system now where enduring powers of attorney are to be registered with the decision support service. This system is really only getting up and running. There are lots and lots of teething problems in relation to it, and it's taking months and months to get attorneys registered. And that's really not, it's not fair or appropriate for people who might need these kinds of arrangements put in place, you know, in short order. So, for example, someone who might be facing into an operation, who might be worried about the outcome of that. Others who suffer from early onset of different types of conditions, who might decide, well, I really now need to be doing this piece of business. If they're told that it's going to take 6 or 8 months to have an enduring power of attorney registered, there's a limbo period then in the meantime when no decisions can be made by the attorney. And if the person loses capacity in between, that's a difficulty that's arising as well. So this has been in the media a little bit recently, Anton. So a lot of problems in that area at the moment for people who wish to put enduring powers of attorney in place.
And strikes me as yet another of those instances where it is useful to have a bit of a chat with the family and decide who is going to do these various things before they're needed to be done.
Always useful to have a chat. Also useful to consider very carefully who the right people are. All right, because in one sense, if you choose the person who the others might consider to be the favourite child, that's going to potentially give rise to problems down the road. So this is a huge financial responsibility. You know, you need to take those things into account as well. And we have seen instances now in the circuit court where the court, I think where we've seen these so far have been on application by the likes of the HSE or whatever. But the court has appointed non-family members to look after those affairs on the basis that the family members put forward wouldn't be the best people to do it.
I assume if family disputes and issues are a big chunk of what keep people in your profession and business, this may be the second cohort, which is neighbours. Text to say, Anton, could you ask your legal expert? I share my driveway with the house next door. They've recently moved in and keep parking in my spot. What legal rights do I have?
You have to go back to the deeds. We've talked about this before, I suppose. So much of, and particularly in relation to property rights, you have to start with the written documentation. So the written documentation will set out who has what rights, I suppose, in relation to the driveway.
Wait, Sonia, you know as well as I do, I've parked in that spot since 1953, or that spot is right outside my house, or I clean that spot. Everybody feels proprietary ownership of a spot.
It is, and it is also possible that the deeds aren't entirely clear and that they simply state that both houses have the right to use the driveway. That's also a possibility too. So in those circumstances, you have to talk to people. You have to be willing to go into the neighbour next door and just say, oh, you know what, when you park this way, maybe I don't have the space to get my car up or don't. And try, start it off that way. It's not one I would be recommending any kind of legal action on, because I just don't see that there's any winner. That this is about learning to live with your neighbours and acknowledging that where you have a shared interest in some way, there has to be a bit of give and take on both sides. That's a difficult one now. But
am I right in assuming that you do get a lot of people who, despite advice to the contrary, decide, I want to go to war with my neighbour?
Well, I won't say a lot of time. Yeah, occasionally you do. And on occasion, people can be very entrenched in the views that they have. And despite the advice you might give them, they wish to proceed. But it is small in number. And as a solicitor, your role is to be objective about the situation, and it's to be objective in the advice that you give. And if you really think your client should not be doing certain things, then your job is to advise your client that they should not be doing those things and not to encourage them further in whatever it is they've been doing.
I'm hoping this is one that won't take too much time, because time is against us, but I'll risk it. Anton, I built a house 15 years ago, no mortgage needed. I now have no deeds to say that there's a house there. What do I need to do, as I have children to pass it on to?
Oh, there are deeds somewhere. There are definitely deeds somewhere. So a solicitor acted in the purchase of that house. That's the place to start.
No, they built it. So this is a person who got a field and built a house.
Okay, but there's a deed for the field, and that's where you start. There has to be a deed for the field. All right. And then in relation to the house, what you're looking for then is copy of the planning permission. You will need to get architects or engineers in to certify compliance with the planning, with the building regulations. And that's what creates your deeds, if you like. But the folio or the deed for the field is the place to start.
So you almost treat it as if you're building from scratch. You go, where's the field? And then all the documents
up
you needed
there
at the start, go back and do it again.
Yes.
But it is doable.
It is doable.
Do you need to do it through a solicitor, or is that the kind of thing that you could probably... As in, would it be faster through a solicitor?
I suppose a solicitor will know what's required and will be able to direct you in doing it. So I suppose I would suggest that going to a solicitor and talking to a solicitor about it is the way to do it.
Fine. But for this individual, all is not lost.
All is not lost. No, achievable. Absolutely. It's very achievable.
Sonia, as ever, thank you very much. That is Sonia McEntee, who is our legal advisor, principal solicitor at Sonia McEntee Solicitors.
The Anton Savage Show with Kiri's.ie on News Talk.